July 5, 2009, it's Watt from Pedro Show.
If the darkness inside vanishes, so will vanish the darkness. night before my eyes. I'm a Morgan for my heritage state. We don't need to be perfect. Every experience is helping me to become a person I want to be. If the darkness inside vanishes, so you vanish the darkness before my eyes. I'm emerging from a hypnotic state. We don't need to be perfect.
Watt from Pedro Show. Started off with John Coltrane this July 5th, 2009, along with Miles Davis doing a tune called Budo. It's a happy Bloody Thursday thing for Longshoremen Union here in Pedro. Except it ain't in Pedro. Where is it? El Dorado.
Yeah.
And although you said there's some stealth stuff going on,
Pedro dudes that didn't want to go down to El Dorado, I think at Little Royal Palms, Plan B.
Oh, it's Royal Palms.
Yeah, the Sunday thing in the park is that traditional summer.
That's right.
Just starting up today.
I was at Royal Palms pedaling yesterday, and it was full. This lot here, there's like three rows of cars in Land's End.
Yeah, it was nuts.
There were so many cars down here.
4th of July madness.
Yeah, it really was. It was
some cool fireworks, wasn't it?
Yeah, over at Dirk's, I saw. Oh, after John Coltrane and Miles Davis, we heard "Emerging" by Migu from their new album, and we got a guest.
Yes, welcome.
Hello.
Oh, Kim White from Echo Park.
All the way from Echo Park,
Yeah, yeah. So we want to fill you in on our Pedro thing for the weekend. So 4th of July was yesterday. A lot of people coming, not from Pedro. I mean, the Pedro people were out, but a lot of people from the rest of the town come down, and we got packed out.
Yeah.
And that beach, Cabrillo here, was all the way.
Parking all over, people like rolling barbecues down the street.
Yeah, yeah.
It was nuts.
Up to Korean Bell, Furman, all the way to Royal Palms. Royal Palms is this part where Roman Sepulveda built a road that went down to the sea, and he built actually a spa using hot spring coming from the ocean. And there was Issei fishermen, first generation Japanese fishermen, there were abalone swimmers, and that thing's been there since turn of century, I think 1911. And it went downhill for a while in the 70s, but they built it back up, and it's part of my peddling route.
Righteous spot.
There's nobody living down there anymore, but it's a neat spot, and it was packed up, man. I couldn't believe it. So much. Did you ever get a tour, Pedro? Did I give you a tour?
I did get
okay.
a tour.
So maybe you would know these if I took you around.
Is that where the cement?
Down
there
the
is. There's remnants because what happened was that spring closed up. And so the spa went into disrepair, and the ocean just beat it down there. There was also a dance club down there. They had a second war, and it got all beat up. There's only walls of that thing left.
Hey, you want to see an old picture?
Oh, I'd love to.
Oh, yeah, Brother Matt's. In fact, there's a great... See the shot there? That's...
Yeah.
See that? Satellite shot of Pedro. Well, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
For those of you
this is how it looked.
The radio...
And what's left now, these are like tide pools. Like there's part of this big old bath that's still there.
Wow.
Parts of it, and it's turned in, you know, when the tide's right, little kids can play around, but all this is gone.
And the water is crystal
place.
Clear. In
and he put a bunch of palm trees down here, and that's why it's called Royal Palms. Pit. Yeah, built into the side of the cliff fire pits, and even chairs, like throne.
Wow. Yeah, down there it's kind of like being in Greece or Spain or something.
Yeah, combo.
Well, when I was driving up here today, I kind of felt like I was in Twin Peaks, San Francisco. You know where the big radio tower is?
Yeah. Twin Peaks. There's a view there where you see the whole town.
I feel like I live on an island here because I hardly ever have to leave the point.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Surrounded by water on three sides.
He's got water on three sides. Yeah, Brother Matt, you know, I'm like 2.5 miles from here.
I think we could see fireworks from Brian's rooftop last night.
Oh, wow. Well, we saw them here.
Yeah.
They did them off a boat.
Fireworks, 360 degrees.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Incredible. All around.
Yeah.
Street ones.
Everything.
City ones.
Real ones.
We had city ones off a barge here.
They're all real.
In fact, Dirk, well, city ones. These are like, you launch them out of big trash cans with sandbags. And, in fact, Dirk knows one of the firemen involved with that thing there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
My friend worked on the Redondo barge a few years ago and snaked a few of them and then took them to Burning Man. They were like big old coconut looking.
Yeah, stuff. Right.
Yeah, those things are great.
Nice.
Speaking of, not Burning Man so much, but leaving Pedro, you, after the school let out, went on a journey?
Yeah, I escaped.
You escaped?
Down to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Yeah, went down. Buddy Samo got a cool pad down in Langosta. Tuan's down there still. He's going to be spending the summer.
3 months.
So,
Tuan was on the last show.
Yeah.
Talking about Roger Corman. He's involved with movie stuff.
Yeah, he's been on a bunch.
And in fact, he's gone there to do writing, right?
He's got some projects he's working on, so they're putting their brain power together and teaming up to make amazing things happen. So cheers to those guys.
So how long were you there? 9 days?
Yeah, like 9 days. It was bitching, just like relaxing. It was totally relaxed and didn't really go much more than like a half hour south to a righteous beach and a half hour north to a righteous beach and a couple of righteous beaches in the middle.
Well, what about the kayaking with the crocodile?
Yeah, there was an estuary right there.
Yeah.
Big, it's like 10 times saltier than the salt water.
Wow.
And, that's where the river mouth at Tamarindo is.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you paddle upstream a little ways, there's a righteous little restaurant there and bar. But we paddled up for a couple hours. And, it was righteous. It bakes in there, though, because you're like 10 degrees above the equator.
I know.
It's
humid.
Like totally hot. But
humid and hot.
Yeah.
But what's relaxing about paddling with crocodiles?
Well, that was the key to yakking with Cricky is to go in the afternoon once, like after 9 o'clock, it was so hot, and those guys like to crash.
Punk.
So, yeah, they're all sleeping.
Okay.
So that but makes it
probably
cool,
nighttime, not too.
Yeah, early morning and sunset time, it gets way more active, I guess.
How long are the crocodiles?
Oh, they're like, some of them are like boat size, like as big as your yak.
Whoa.
I think there might be actually caimans, but they're still like crocodiles as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's a trip. Different than an alligator.
Yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah. And one of the beaches we were on was Playa Grande, where the big leatherback turtles go and
their
little
eggs.
No, they go like around November and December, I guess.
Okay,
but they're like
season.
Big 1,000-pound creatures, up 6-foot turtles, like going up and laying their eggs on the beach.
Mm.
Wow. They bury them?
I think so.
They do bury them.
Yeah, it's got to be totally dark around there, otherwise it confuses them. So.
Is that the one when they? Then the babies got to dig their way out and make the big
trek to
the camel maze come down shouting.
Yeah, seagull species.
Yeah. Get all this, there's some of them gaviotas that turned all belige and started chowing on whales.
Wow.
Because some kind of bad habit from the gomi, from the garbage basura, makes them all aggressive and they're fucking chowing on whales.
Wow.
Birds. Down there off Chile. Were you there with the Honduras thing?
Yeah, he's there right now.
The boss is there.
Yeah.
In his pajamas. The army got him out and they put him on a
get
plane.
Get out of town.
And all the OAS is saying no more. This is over. This was when U.S. was kind of more involved with things. We had these army coups.
Yeah, it was wild.
And I guess he was going to put a vote to the people about getting rid of a term limit?
Yeah, changing their constitution a little bit so he could stick around longer.
Well, it was going to be a referendum.
Yeah.
That means people could have voted it down,
right? They didn't want any opinions.
Yeah. Bye. Yeah. You're out of there.
Yeah,
so he's living in Costa Rica.
Yeah, he was chilling over there.
Costa Rica's they didn't have a lot of war.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Switzerland of Central America,
yeah.
Or the Western Hemisphere, I guess. So, yeah, they get their leaders who are leaving their countries to go hide out. I guess it's not the first time. And they also have like incredibly high literacy rate, like
yeah, right.
Have a 98% literacy
rate.
Well, it's
also a really European culture, isn't it?
Like, a lot of those places down there, they got their influx of a lot of European down there. So there were some restaurants you go, everyone's speaking Italian. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, it was neat. A lot of Argentinians and stuff. Yeah,
so. When I lived in New York...
I want to go there. Oh. Have you been down there, Kim?
No, I haven't, but I worked for at a law office, and the lawyer, he was a big music business lawyer, and his brother was the president of Costa Rica.
Oh, nice connection.
Well, yeah, and this was in the 80s, and his partner was also like a quote-unquote music business lawyer, but he represented Noriega. And he also represented some of the Medellin people. So it was a very interesting place to work.
Some interesting dinner
and
parties.
He kept saying to his partner, his law partner, like, can you just tell your brother to let us, you know, cruise through Costa Rica?
Because right next door in the 80s was the big war in El Salvador.
Yeah, Sandinistas.
Like, just talk to your brother.
In Nicaragua?
Yeah, it was only like an hour away. That area used to be Nicaragua, like 100 years ago or so,
that
part of Costa Rica. But there's a guy named Mike from Huntington Beach down there. Got Mike's Langosta Surf Club. Really
Langosta
cool spot.
Langosta Lobsters?
Tamarindo there is like the main little town. It's really mellow little surf town. And then just out of the point, which is even mellower, is this little town community called Langosta. So he's got
a... Langosta the word for lobster?
Yeah. So he's got a really cool spot right there. And he's a Minuteman down at Safari Sam's back in the day. Old Huntington Beach.
Oh, that's the cat who flowed the invite.
Yeah, so you got to open invitation for a gig down there whenever you like. He was totally stoked. So.
Wow. What'd you chow?
Lots of ceviche.
Yeah.
Yeah, all kinds. Dorado.
Mm-hmm.
And like...
What's the prices like?
In Tamarindo, the prices were pretty much the same as here. Some places, beers would be like about, I think the cheapest were like 600 colones. That would be like about, let's see, it's 550, 570 colones to a dollar.
So like a dollar beer.
So, yeah, but most
kind
of places,
beer?
Imperial. Yeah, that was
a
local
Costa Rica
beer. Yeah, so we pounded. many.
Muchas
cervezas. Yeah.
Any lobster?
There's a few spots that I guess really got it and it's fresh, but we didn't really go that route.
You see a lot of surfers?
Oh, man, all kinds.
Yeah, because that's why I hear the good rep about Costa Rica.
Yeah, that spot, Tamarindo, it's an endless summer, too. Robert August, Wingnut, Robert August got a surf shop right there.
Oh, wow.
An endless summer, too, that was like a great spot. And all these places within like, half hour up, half hour down, world-class beaches, great spots.
And you were setting off in a yak right off the beach?
Right up from the river mouth.
Okay.
On the north side of Tamarindo.
Because I'm saying, if they're surfing, that means there's some waves.
Yeah.
And setting off in a yak with waves is kind of tough.
Yeah, that was a little bit more out. But in the estuary, it went back pretty far.
Yeah, and be all sheltered. And
yeah, and I guess way back, because of the tide and stuff, there's like some salt licks or salt flats back there. That's action for a lot of animals. Heading into that, so that was way back though. But we went for hours. It was really cool. The mangroves, you can go like yakking in the mangroves. It was just like these like big tree clubhouses
hanging
over the water. It was really cool.
Wow. Any music?
Didn't see any live music, mostly just listening to reggae and listen internet radio.
No Costa Rica bands.
No, that area is there. I guess like Costa Rica had to kind of crack down because so many surfer guys were working in restaurants and stuff and taking a lot of the jobs from the locals. So I guess they had to crack down to just kind of give the locals priority as far as work goes. I guess there's still some bands that come in, local bands, open mic things. But we didn't really do the nightclub.
What's their music style like? Salsa or what?
Well, where we were was mostly like surfers. So it wasn't
like
really
Gaijin foreigners, right?
Yeah,
I wonder what the indigenous, what the music scene there is.
Yeah, I don't know.
Any Costa Rica punk bands?
Yeah, I'd probably have to go more to San Jose.
The big town?
Yeah, because out where we were, it was mostly just catering to the surf crowd.
Turista.
Yeah, it was really neat. It was like one paved road through Tamarindo, kind of, and all kinds of hostels and surf shops and little smoothie shops, and it was really mellow little town, even though that's like the hectic town, Tamarindo. It wasn't hectic, you know, by our standards here. It was really mellow, you know, but compared to other places, it was hectic because other places were so chill.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And where'd you conk?
Samo's pad right there in Langosta. You got a righteous spot.
That's where Twine's staying.
Yeah, you got a pool there, so when you come in from your travels, your cruise for the day, just take a dive in the pool and then chill in the hammock and kick it as righteous pad. Yeah, yeah.
It was a happening journey.
Yeah, yeah, it was great.
All right.
Great trip.
Another one in the bag.
Yeah.
Let's hear some music. Pedro Show. We started that chunk of music out with something from Department of Real Estate. There's a cat in that band named Keo Griffith. He gave me this thing. Came to a gig Wednesday. I played the Old Town Pub in Pasadena with Tom and Raoul. Pretty intense gig.
So you're gonna be.
I didn't take my coat off. They opened up the window on the side though, but there's like no draft, you know, no flow. So if I stuck my head out the window a few times, you thought that. Well, the way that is, you know, it's in the back alley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a strange place there, but a good gig. They got less of a toy PA thing going, and yeah.
So is that where you're going to be doing something each month, or that was Redwood?
No, that's Redwood. Oh. But he was there at the gig, Joe Redwood. He's got this new look, like Marlon Brando in the Wild One, you know, that hat? Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a trip. I think he's from Dallas originally. He's a good guy. But Keo came and gave me this thing. I saw him a few days before at this. Did I talk about this trippy gig where they sat us on the deck in this pad with them? And they were. It was a four-piece, and it was. Playing with little kitty toys and just, rolling around on the deck and dancing, kind of dancing or whatever. It was, I don't know, kind of theater, kind of improvised avant-garde. And Keo was one of the four. Toko Honda was one. Yeah, I was a trip. See her rolling around on the deck. Whoa, what is this about? Yeah. Do you know about this? This is a scene that Nels is familiar with too, but his brother Alex really no beats hardly, and although he's a drummer, but you know, it's Joe Berardi's part of this too. He used to be in the Fibonacci's, and a lot of these cats are really good musicians, but they don't, you know, they play kind of event driven, not time driven pieces. You know, this is big. I bet you they're never played the same twice. I mean, you know, it's this kind of feel.
No doubt.
And this band, he gave me Department of Real Estate. Trippy band, I like it. And Taryn Lynette's for it, Tiff. She's coming next week, right?
Hey, Tiff.
But she's in the valley now. This lady was a sailor for 8 years.
And
now what she does, she inspects cement.
Yes.
She inspects cement.
Work sites. They got a little sailor trip yesterday. They got these Coast Guard.
I saw it, the buoy boats out there, or cutters out
buoy
there.
Buoy tender, so they're giving free tours. So my nephew digs on the coasties. So.
That's where the Sanzanita blew up.
Yeah. It was a trip on the buoy tender, though, because they had these huge, you know, you wonder how the buoy stays in one place, right?
Right. So, it's moored, right?
Yeah, they had these big old 8,500-pound blocks of cement with a big old shackle on the top.
So, that's right. It's moored.
It keeps it in place.
And good conch pads for the Sheikahs.
Yeah.
I said, man, they must have. You know, I've been seeing a lot at the Angels Gate. Never used to see them, these babies. And they must have been there with the firework.
Oh, yeah. Know?
So there Freak was only out. Eight of them today paddling. And all piled on each other on one rock. I think they were freaked out. You know, loud noises on the animals must just trip them out. But I thought, you know, I paddled. Windy, I was telling you, it got pretty wet, even early. But I thought it was going to be all garbage. The harbor was kind of clean. I don't know why. Maybe because it was kind of churning, so maybe... Actually, it was a little rougher inside than outside. Now, you went out in wind, right? When was that?
That was Friday.
Friday?
Yeah, it was...
Thursday, there was big wind on me.
Yeah, it's been getting windy early.
Did you get wet?
Yeah.
Especially when you're going against it, man. Just break it all.
Yeah, we're on the outside. Went out to the buoy. And
Tuesday I was outside, went to the buoy, and it took 80 minutes to get out there, 20 minutes to get back.
Wow.
The current was so strong. It was wind, but there was also strong-ass current. If you just, like, calm down on the paddling, it started carrying.
Yeah, sometimes I'll just go pump it and then stop and just see how much you start drifting.
Yeah, big time. It was taking me, you know, east, you know, so... What was I thought was a straight line to the buoy ended up being this big parabolic curve. But yeah, this poor. Also, right in
the Angel's Gate, Luca, this dolphin, fins and
inside,
stuff.
Huh?
But clown coming in, you know, the, I don't know, amateur, yeah, the boaters, just jamming in there. In fact, you know what? There was a cat going out with one of these big, like, hot rod motor in the back boats, you know, like a V8, you know. And he was jamming on it inside the harbor, and the port police, the sirens came on, just like on the freeway, the blue lights.
Yeah, that was incredible, just the number of cops out there yesterday.
That was a lot yesterday, yeah. But there was one guy cruising around, and he pulled this guy over, like it was the freeway. Uh-huh. That's dangerous, and they're not the smartest guys. These guys don't do it a lot. They're not like the fishermen.
They got more dollars than cents. You can buy their big toys, but they don't.
Yeah, that and jet ski.
Yeah.
That's amateur rock, big time. His cat had two of his kids. He was hanging on the back of his two little kids. I mean, little ones, like 5, 6.
You get a hardcore drunk driving ticket, too.
Probably. Probably. I bet you there are a lot of drunk boaters. Those baseball players.
Yeah.
Got the heads knocked off.
Yeah.
In Ohio. Anyway. Still righteous battle. Mm-hmm. But it's windy for July. So, we want to get to our guest here. Miss Kim White. Your music journey. You've been in the racket a while, but not lately. Now you're chow, right?
Whenever you see actors eating on camera, I prepare the food for them, which is, I don't know, it's kind of weird.
Interesting specialty.
How'd you get into that? Because, like I said, you're from music. That's how I know you.
Yeah. How did I get into it? I did music for about, I don't know, 18 years.
Yeah. Well, how'd you get into that?
And how'd I get into that?
Yeah. New York?
Yeah, I moved to New York to work for a label called Celluloid Records, which Bill Laswell was a major part of. And
The Last Poets, Celluloid.
The Last Poets, B-Side, Grand Mixer DST, Africa Bambaataa, John Lydon, Time Zone World Destruction.
Yeah.
And they also did a lot of the African, Tori Kunda, Fela Kuti.
Yeah.
One of the things that I worked on.
How'd you get working there? You got an invite?
How did I end up working there? The Rhythm Lounge was a club in L.A.
Yeah.
That my friend Solomon owned and operated. And whenever they would bring the rappers in from New York and stuff, they would come to the Rhythm Lounge. And so through there, I met B-Side. He was a French rapper who had a thing with Fab Five Freddy called Chan Jabit.
Mm-hmm.
And she was married to a man named Bernard Zekri, and Bernard was the chief operator at the label.
Okay.
And Bernard had asked me to put together a band, a live band for Anne-Marie, which is funny, because the band I put together for her in 1984 was just a bunch of kids, and today, you know, Steve Fishman, who plays with, you know, everybody. John Shanks, who's won a few Grammys, works with Melissa Etheridge and Sheryl Crow and all these people. He's driving a Bentley now. It's funny. Now I'm forgetting who they are. But everybody who was in that little tiny band is somebody big now.
So it was a springboard.
Yeah, I guess, you know, we put together a good little band.
So you put together a band, they said, come work the label.
Yeah, and then he said, he was always a writer. He went back to France, and he started working for a magazine called Actuel, which was, journalistic, revolutionary, kind of really interesting. And so he said, do you want to come to New York and take over, you know, where I left off? And I said, sure. He said, can you be there in 3 weeks? I said, yeah.
Wow.
And I was like 21.
Where'd you live?
22.
Manhattan?
I sublet Fab Five Freddy's old apartment on 110th and Broadway in Spanish Harlem.
Yeah.
First time I ever saw a cockroach. Then I moved to Queens, Astoria, Queens. And I pretty much lived I never lived in the city. I didn't like living in the city.
Yeah.
I loved having a neighborhood to go home to.
Yeah.
And Astoria, Queens was a great neighborhood.
So how long were you there at the Celluloid?
I stayed there for two and a half years, my paycheck started bouncing. And that's when I went to work for their lawyers, which we talked about earlier, the ones whose brother was a president.
Costa Rica.
And the drug cartel and that whole drama. And then I went, after that, got a job at EMI, where the Red Hot Chili Peppers were, had put out, one or two records.
Andy Gill.
By that time, yeah. And when I got to EMI, everybody at the label was like, oh, we have this band, they're disgusting. Like, if you let them in your office, don't let them sit on your couch. If you shake hands with them, wash your hands immediately. And so I was like, okay. And I never told them that I knew them from L.A. You know, I was like, okay. And then they flew me out to L.A. to meet the band. And it was so funny. I went to Lindy's house.
Yeah, the manager.
And the guys came in and they were like, this is Kim. She's going to be in charge of your career at EMI. And they were like, hey, how's it going? And I was like, good, how are you guys? And Lindy's like, do you guys know each other? And we went, mm-hmm. But, that, you know, we never, ever, ever talked about the past stuff, which was great. So we had a good working relationship, and the rest is history there. They went gold.
They left EMI.
Records. And and I left EMI after that, too. We all left. I went to Geffen, and they went to Warner Brothers.
So Geffen was the next stop after EMI.
Geffen was the next on the Whistle Stop tour.
And when's that? That's before Sonics?
That was just before Sonics, yeah. In fact, I think Kate had just brought them to the label.
Okay.
Because and then DGC started, and then Sonics brought Nirvana,
right?
Which a lot of people tell you they signed Nirvana, but Kim and Thurston, like, hey, these are our friends. We really like them.
Yeah, I toured with them.
Yeah.
Dinosaur. I saw me and Raymond went and saw them open up for Dinosaur at the Palladium, and they did a Wipers song.
Oh.
Dimension 7.
I'm really into the Wipers right now.
Yeah?
Like, I'm having a huge...
Yeah, I really like the first three albums.
Rebirth.
Greg Sage, incredible. Mm-hmm. Portland. A much different Portland in those days.
Like,
they were the only band from there. One place to play. It's so much different now. I did a gig there last month.
It's kind of fancy. Yeah.
A lot of young people, it's a kind of Silver Lake.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 years ago, people just started moving. Maybe that was more than 10. 15 years ago when people started moving. That's what this is, all these young people moving there. A lot of clubs opened up.
I mean, the first time I went to Portland, it was pretty scary.
Yeah, especially where you played, the Satyricon.
Uh-huh.
I think the cat's name was George.
And what
I think
was
he was a Greek
one?
Guy, but he looked like Carlos Santana.
Was the other one Luna? La Luna?
A little later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played there and turned into, changed the name to Pine Street Theater. Monkey people. Monkey presents with a Q, Monkey.
Oh, Monkey.
Yeah,
which is a Canadian promoter.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, they're Canadian.
I've worked for them for so long and I never, don't really know them that well.
Uh-huh.
But they're not Live Nation.
Nope. So the Wipers.
Yeah, Wipers, those first three albums. But I remember Nirvana doing that. You know, Chris Novoselic, the first year was here in Pedro. Pedro.
What?
Yeah. Until he was 12, I guess he moved.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm, he's got family here. There's Novoselic is still here.
Excellent.
He comes and visits. And but he lives in, has like a little collective. He's got his family on some farm in Southern Washington. Kind of rural.
Mm-hmm.
After the Geffen thing, so you're what was it like being a label person?
It was really fun. I'm not going to lie. I mean,
to lie on this show.
No, I know, but a lot of people go, "Oh, it was so hard." But you know, I mean, it was hard, but I had such a good expense account. That I have to like say, nobody ever said, "What is this? What was this
They were just throwing money around.
Like, nobody ever said, stop, you're spending too much. You know? So.
And we're charging the bands back for it.
God. You know, I didn't really fully understand that till I got into
neither did the bands.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's...
Oh, they're taking us out to chow. No, you're taking...
$1,000 dinner?
You're taking your A&R man out for chow, basically.
Yeah. Someone bought me a lot of sushi. But, no, I had a really good time. I mean, one of the main bands I worked with when I was at Geffen was Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah.
You know?
The old days in England.
Yeah, and we're still friends.
She's still playing?
She is still playing. Severin is
still with that bass player? Because he stuck with her that whole time, right?
Wait, what do you mean?
Didn't he have from the first band she's...
Oh, yes. Well, Severin, Budgie, and Susie were the...
Budgie drummer.
They were the core members.
Right.
Yeah. And Severin's doing a lot of really cool stuff right now.
Does he still play with her, though?
No.
Oh, okay.
He's totally into this whole thing where he's doing music for silent movies. So he did Anton Artaud, The Clergyman in the Seashell, and he'll go into a venue and he'll rewrite music for it and they'll put it up on the screen and he and his partner will play the music live, but he kind of has like a Mad Professor vibe with the candelabra and it's...
Nels did one of those with Carla maybe a month ago.
Oh, really?
And you know who else does that? Roger Miller's got a little unit that...
Does music for
silent movies, yeah.
Wow. It's a thing.
Little three-piece orchestra. Yeah, and it's kind of... You're interpreting as you're watching it. Bob saw it, remember? He was telling us about it. And he said it was incredible. They had little notes. And they had really prepared and worked at it.
I mean, Severin's always kept busy, you know,
outside of the
band.
Yeah, great musician.
You know, and
Budgie
really
was a cat who played on a lot of people's records.
Yeah, he's playing with a girl now, Jessie Evans. Do you know Jessie?
Wow.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah, how do I know her? Do I do some gigs?
You probably do. I mean, she I think is based in Berlin.
Yeah, yeah. And I think maybe the road boss, the tour boss for Stooges, Henry, has something to do with her.
Okay.
But I thought the drummer was... God, he's got a fake name. But
Budgie.
It was Junior... No, not Budgie. This guy named...
Toby Dammit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toby Dammit.
He plays with him, too.
That's the stage name. That ain't his real name,
no.
But
that's my cat's name.
He played with... God, who did he play with? Maybe Egg or something.
He played with... I can't... You know what?
He's played with a lot of cats.
I didn't do my research, but...
My Alzheimer's kicking in, but...
Google him.
He's a good cat. You know what? They opened for the Stooges a couple of gigs.
They did. And, you know, Jesse has a very, early Susie vibe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think her style is more like the Creatures, tribal-ish.
Right, real minimal, though. It's just
very
her and the drummer.
Yeah, it's super cool. Well, yeah.
She plays some sax.
Exactly.
You know what's happening.
So I like that.
Okay, so what's Susie doing now?
She is doing her own material, and she's still playing live, and I haven't talked to her. It's been a while.
Okay.
But
the good thing about working at the labels was working artists like that.
Yeah, I mean, I made a lot of friends for life, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, people...
What about corporate culture?
Couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
You know, I really couldn't... That was the hard part about it.
Yeah.
I mean, the mentality at a lot of those labels was, you know, you really had to fight your way within the corporate structure, and their theory was, if you can't fight your way inside the corporate structure, how are you going to fight your way out on the street when you're competing with other labels and other artists? So they would actually, you know, kind of get off on pitting you against each other in your departments, you know? And I mean,
cubicle politics.
It is, and for me to have to work against, you know, Cato and Rosie, was weird. You know, like, because I was, at that point, when we split, I was Geffen, they were DGC, and we were competing for the same spots, and the same budgets, and the same everything, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty frustrating, and so, I got out.
Right. And started working with bands.
And I
directly
started managing the Screaming Trees?
That was the first one, and I took them on their first two tours. Firehose. They had two fat guys.
Like, quite large. 300.
I don't mean fat bad, because D. Boone, you know, they reminded me of D. Boone. The big man, and they played very passionately, and they had great singer.
Then,
he was kind of big at first two, but the brothers, Connor brothers, were huge, but great players.
6'2"?
Yeah, and he had kind of a gut in those at the first.
Beer gut, yeah.
They had it was trippy. They had a boat, a van, and they just put this couch in the back. It wasn't even bolted down or anything. Yeah, it was just in there, and the thing rolled over in Florida. And Mark got really hurt. They were a great band, though. I really liked them.
Dan's one of my favorite. They were an SST bass players band of all time.
Yeah, he's got a band now called Valis.
Yes, he does.
I don't know what Gary Lee's doing.
You know what? Neither do they.
Does he live in upstate New York or something?
He moved to Texas with Dr. Janet. Remember Dr.
Right,
Janet?
Right, right.
And Dan said he has kids, but they don't know, like, no one's heard from him.
Wow.
It's been years.
He wrote all the songs.
I'm perpetrating this right now.
But he wrote all the songs. Gary Lee was the man.
Yeah, well, he was the psychedelic influence on that band.
But a big thing of him was Mark's voice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mark has a
great
voice.
A few drummers. Had a Mark Pickerel.
Well, yeah.
He left early.
And Barrett.
Barrett later. But and then another guy after that, too. But Mark Pickerel was the guy when I took him on tour, and he ended up making his own bands. I think he's got a band called Truly now.
Another
one?
My Alzheimer's kicking in now.
And
he did have a band called Truly, but now he's back in Ellensburg. He's got
He
had a record store.
Yeah, that's where they were from.
And he's got a project that he's working on right now. And
Ellensburg, a little town by Yakima in the central eastern part of Washington.
The capital of eastern Washington.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
not too far from Hanford.
Yeah.
The nightmare. Not too far from Columbia River either.
It's a very strange place.
Yeah.
Anybody who's ever been to the Tri-Cities?
Yeah, and it's not Seattle.
Kennewick?
I've driven through. And I've actually played Ellensburg, and I've played Yakima. I did a gig with Screaming Trees, Firehose, and Slovenly.
Yakima, the Palm Springs of the North?
Well, that whole thing, when you get east of the Cascades, it turns into desert.
Yeah.
People doesn't realize it. Same with Oregon. There's rain shadow. So it's not all fir trees.
No,
and once you get over those mountains, it's just, you know, up to Idaho, that prairie of Idaho, it's like Mojave North. It's just totally empty. There's no trees. It's kind of neat.
Have you talked to Barrett?
Yeah, you brought him to a gig.
Oh, that's right. He did. Yeah, he's doing great.
Now, he was living in New Mexico for a while after Seattle.
He got his degree in cultural anthropology.
Right, and he became a Zen priest.
Yeah.
But he's still doing the music, drumming. Great drummer.
He's a total jazz dude now.
Yeah, that's what the record he gave me.
Yeah,
I got some. We'll play some.
Debut that shit.
Yeah, we got a few minutes to.
Okay.
Let's see how much time for the
dead air.
But a little dead air is okay. They filled it up with the motorcycles. Ship ran by. So how did you meet the Screaming Trees?
They were my favorite band.
Oh, just by
and
the
I
records,
just
the
SST
the
gigs,
records.
You know? Yeah.
Because that's how I found out about them from the SST. They said, why don't you take these guys on tour? And here, listen to the. In those days, cassettes still.
Yeah.
So I listened to the cassette. It was mixed really strange, but such great songs. And I said, sure. And then I saw the picture with the two big guys. It was like, yeah, man, this is great. And the way Gary Lee would, like, get on the deck and roll around.
He would. He was a wild
Townsend's
man.
With his arms.
He would do, like, you know, rock neck with his hair going around in circles. And
windmills with the arm like Townsend.
And rolling around on the floor. Like, for big
and playing, guys. Yeah, you know,
like,
wailing on it.
Changes Come was one of my favorite songs by them.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a 7-inch.
It did have like a 60s thing, but they were not old guys. They were young guys, but Gary Lee must have listened to a lot of 60s records.
Orange Airplane.
Yeah.
Do you know Orange Airplane? Off of Clairvoyance.
Clairvoyance,
yeah.
That's the album. That's
that
the first one I heard.
Very first. That was, who did that?
don't know, it's mixed really strange. Every song's different. The snare drum's like, in, you know, in the hallway.
I don't
want to
discredit Steve Fisk, but...
It's really strange, but the songs...
He might have done that.
The songs are so fucking happening. When they played those things live, that band was smoking.
I wish
and
I
the
saw...
And they had a guy named Rod.
Rod Doak.
Rod Doak was the mixer man and, like, kind of road man.
Yeah.
And what's he doing now? I haven't seen him in a long time.
I don't know if anybody knows where Rod Doak is.
Wow, Rod. Because he was like the fifth guy.
Yeah, he
was. Yeah. It was righteous touring with them. They never whined. They played their hearts out every night. They were great,
and got in
great
fights
men.
Every night.
Well, between themselves. They never fought with us. They were sweethearts. But there was a lot of tension in the band, I know.
And Mark just brought tension with him wherever he went. I mean,
you know what, in the way he seemed like a very quiet guy, but inside the band I know that they told me.
A lot of trouble.
Great singer, man. What a voice.
Unbelievable.
What a voice. And Gary Lee just wrote him the greatest things.
But it wasn't Mark's style, I think, at the end of the
whatever
day.
It was.
Yeah.
I was more into, when they signed the big label, the records weren't as good as those other ones, even though they sounded better.
You know, we brought Don Fleming and John Aniello in on that one, and I think Don was a great producer for them because he made Mark relax. Do you know what I mean? Don's so groovy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where him, like, leading the whole, you know, him being behind the helm and the producer, whatever, because if anybody else would have walked in there and said they were the producer, like, Mark would have hated them immediately, I think, you know? But for Don to come in there and just be like, Don.
Yeah.
He's
a great cat.
It was good.
Here, we'll talk some more because it's the end of the first hour. July 5th, 2009, Watt for Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour two. June 5th, 2009, it's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
want to ask you, when you do all these things, you play with your, play the guitar with your teeth, is that by inspiration only?
You know, if I feel like putting the guitar down and stepping on it, you know, I'll do it if I feel like it, you know.
Have you done that?
Oh, yeah, you know, we go to, you know, there's so many different things we do, and nothing is never the same each night. Even if it's a bad night or a good night, it's, everything's always different because it's more improvised. You know, we're almost like a free feeling, you know, free feeling. And everything we do, like playing with our teeth or with our elbows and all that, it's just like a because we feel like it right that particular moment.
You are supposed to be something very new and very fresh in pop business. How do you feel about that yourself?
There's so many different outlets, you know, we have so many different things. Like, Hey Jules, it's about 100th, you know, of our feelings. We like it, that's how we recorded it, you know. But we have so many different other sounds, you know, that we just barely begun.
Mitch Mitchell.
So what was it like in recording first Hendrix album? I mean, the sound of the
real
drums.
Real simple. I mean, we were in a little studio in London. I think it was like, I think it's four track, and it was done very quickly. A lot of the stuff is first takes.
Was it
the same as with every other band at that point? You know, I mean,
Fire was.
I mean, we had a thing with Chas Chandler was managing us and producing us for the first album and a half, and he never let us really get over the fact that House of the Rising Sun was like produced for $10 or something, and so there was no reason why we should spend any more time or money in the studio than, you know, they ever did, which was not really the way that we were trying to look towards things at that point. And Jimmy liked to spend time in the studio and experiment to find out what could be done. It wasn't like at that point you couldn't press a button and have instant phasing or flanging. You know, you had to rig up another tape machine and all kinds of shit, you know. But that was half the fun of it. And of course, you know, as you make more money, it costs us more and more time, you know, more and more in the studios.
I mean, do you remember how much it cost to make the first record?
No, I don't. But I'd say no more than probably $1,000. I mean, you know, it was done very, very quickly. We were working all the time, you know, probably like Mac with the Faces, you know, literally within the first 2 weeks, we had 2 weeks rehearsal and went out and did a tour in France with Johnny Halliday. And so, yeah, we were just constantly on the road, which was, you know, it's good in some ways.
Mm-hmm. So then the first album was basically the set you had been playing live?
No, we didn't even have time to go out and really try it on the road. It was fitting in sessions between your touring. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we never even, I don't think we even played on stage. You know, you just played in the studio once.
real gone teenage beatnik. I'm a beatnik and I'm really hip. I love to smile with a droopy lip. I play the bongos, I don't drive a jack. I don't dig squares, man, they're dry. I don't dig squares, man, they're a drag. I don't dig the classes in the school. I flip when I hear Frankie singing cool. Don't give me records, left their stereo. I call my girlfriend's father Daddy-O. I don't dig squares, man, they're a terrifying drag. I like to cha-cha in Bermuda, sure. I don't dig Ivy clothes, they're too neat. I dig a t-shirt when it's really big. I look rather like Fabian, but I don't drag. I don't dig squares, man, they are a drag. I don't dig squares, man, they just don't understand me.
Watch for Pedro show. Started the second hour off with Untitled First Movement by Stefano Palia. In November, I'm going to go to Italy and do 5 gigs with Stefano.
Oh, neat.
And a drummer friend of his named Andrea. And then we're going to make an album. He's a great cat I met from Second Man Tour, the Second Opera. Did like 6 Italian gigs in 2004. And he wrote along with us. Lives in Bologna. And avant-garde musician. Great cat, originally from Genoa. He comes over here and plays in U.S. too. He knows some Providence and New York scenes, that kind of music. He's actually a righteous cat. Can't wait to do that project. Then we heard Jimi Hendrix and Mitch Mitchell speaking, not together, two separate things, but talk about the band and musics and interesting perspectives. $1,000 for audio experience.
Rest in peace.
Jamie Connell. Yeah, of course. Beautiful musicians. Then we heard a friend of me and Kim's. You'd like him too, brother man. Jim Brown with his new band, The Halloys, and a tune called Lakeland, which you read me the lyrics. It's from the album's called Art Wars, right?
Yeah.
I was nothing. You hear that?
Yeah.
The leash.
Your own Ray gun.
You're getting tugged. Yeah, your own Ray gun. I was nothing. Then I was nowhere. Now I'm now here. I am Lakeland. I've come to talk to everything. My old friend from the beginning. I send the Halloys. I send the Halloys. I send the Halloys. When you're willing, I'll call your name. And your lose becomes... your gain is probably loss, but there's an E there, it's typo. Yeah, I've done that. I look at old Minuteman records, there's fuck up words. Somewhere there's white out, and I just wrote in the letter. Yeah. One time I whited out a place and I forgot to write something on Punchline. Yeah. Yeah, fuck. What song was it? Yeah, I can't remember. Anyway, to continue. All your loss becomes your gain. Now is gold. Shift your weight. Unfold the making of a new landscape. I send the Halloys. I send the Halloys. I send the Halloys. Yeah. Jim Brown played many years with his brother as Bluebird and now as Halloys. So that was great. And then we heard Louis Nye doing Teenage Beatnik. Now, Louis Nye was a comedian guy from 50s. 60s, and ended up as a judge on the Gong Show.
Right on.
But that he had this weird character he developed. Hi-Ho Steve-O. There was another song he did because he was a sidekick on the Steve Allen Show.
Oh, yeah.
Steve Allen played the piano and claimed to have written 10,000 songs or something. Raymond's got a joke about that. Hey, did you see that thing in the LA Weekly on page 51? It's a big Levi ad, and it's totally done in Raymond style. Even
no.
His, maybe Raymond did it. I don't know. It's wanted. It's like a want ad about a creative writer with long publishing future. It's like for the Declaration of Independence had right next to it. I don't know what it was. Is it a joke?
Is
a parody?
This week?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll check it out.
Because Bob Starrs flowed me a thing on it. And then I checked it out at Mr. Kim's liquor store here had LA Week, and I looked at it. It's on page 51. Tom Watson, too, floated to me. What's this about? So I called Raymond, left a message. I haven't talked to him. It's kind of controversy. What do you do, something merch like that? Is it a real Levi ad? Maybe it's a fake one. Maybe it's a put on. I don't know. Maybe some dude faked Raymond.
Mm.
I don't know. It's a mystery.
Here's that one dude's kind of like got the imitation Gordon Wisdom.
Yeah,
he's like he got a commercial. I thought it was Wisdom, but
wow. There's a cat named Robert Williams, you know, famous painter, and there's a guy named Coop, and his style is kind of close. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe it's just a coincidence, or
I don't know, but it's not like music where if you copyright something. I mean, with art, can you say you're jacking my style, or?
I know with writing, it's got to be a. If you do it with books, it's got to be a parody or a satire.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so like with Duchamp with the mustache on the Mona Lisa, you know.
Right.
It's kind of copying, but adding to it, because somebody there was supposed to be a sequel to Catcher in the Rye, and that. The cat who tried to bring it out got sued and it's stopped because there was enough, it was too much imitation and not enough satire and parody or something like this. I don't know. Let's get back to your music journey. So you just liked Screaming Trees, you heard the record, and so you called them up, said...
No, I went to a bunch of their shows and we became friends, and then I was up in Seattle.
Oh, so you had moved?
No, I was just visiting, and then Mark said...
But were you still living in New York? Did you come back to SoCal yet?
Yeah, when I was at Geffen, I came back.
Yeah.
So that was like Lincoln's birthday, 1990.
Wow.
I remember.
Yeah. Damn.
How do you forget Lincoln's birthday?
Yeah, I don't know. I think they lump it together now. It's President's Day, right?
Yeah. It's also Bill Laswell's birthday.
Ah.
Somehow.
So you're in SoCal and you make a visit. You're living here. And then you make a visit to Seattle.
Yeah, and Mark said, come over, I want to talk to you about something. And, you know, he's like, basically, you're managing the Banshees in the U.S. anyway. I mean, you're doing, everything you're doing with your artists, like what you did with the Chili Peppers, you were sort of managing, like, and I just want you to manage us.
Well, you were like a liaison with the label.
Yeah, I was liaison with the label, with the booking agents,
yeah.
With the, you know, the promoters, with the radio stations, I mean, kind of, and with the manager, well, in their case, the manager, it was all in Europe, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was kind of scary. He said, will you manage us? And I was like, oh, I don't know, I guess so. And he's like, well, then you need to say it out loud. Mm-hmm. And I said, say what? And he said, I am the manager of the Screaming Trees. And I was like, I can't say it. He's like, well, then you're not our manager. You have to say it out loud. So I was like, okay, I am the manager of the Screaming Trees. And I knew at that point, I'm like, oh, I'm fucked now.
Were they SST?
By that time, they were Epic. They'd already done Uncle Anesthesia.
Okay. And, so how did they get, do you know how they got that Epic thing? I was just...
Bob Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer just going to the gigs and say, hey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Pfeiffer had a band called Human Switchboard.
He did, indeed.
Yeah.
I think he's in jail now.
Why?
Anthony Pelicano. Remember?
Yeah, wiretap.
So, yeah, Bob was wiretapping everybody when he was at Hollywood Records. And using Anthony Pelicano to, like, follow his wife around and follow, you know.
Wow.
He did some bad stuff. And,
The Fife.
Broke down like a little baby on the stand, started to cry.
Yeah.
Said if he went to jail, that he would kill himself first. And wow. Anyway, so yeah, I think he's serving 2 years. He got off light.
Some deal.
Yeah. But anyway.
Pelicano didn't.
No.
But he was like hard charging. He wasn't going to make a deal.
Uh-uh.
Yeah.
And Bob cried. But anyway, so. Yeah, so I started working with Bob, and then we made Sweet Oblivion.
Yeah, and like they toured with Spin Doctors?
Well, first tour we did was with Luna, remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
That was a great tour, and I cannot, I think Dean was talking about some of the crazy things that happened on that tour, which
he was from Galaxy 500. About.
Yeah, Galaxy 500.
Boston.
I love Galaxy 500.
And, but then it was Spin Doctors. I mean, remember, it was like some merch.
Spin Doctors was after they fired me and hired Metallica's management team.
That's right.
Which was the end.
Because they had the connections.
Because we always did cool tours, you know?
Yeah, right.
I thought... I don't know if I was such a good manager, but it's nice to hear, like, in hindsight, Barrett and Van said, you were the only one that ever got us town cars. You were the only one that was nice to us.
The important stuff.
Well, he's like, we always had the most fun with you, you know. We had good tours. We always went to good restaurants. You always introduced us to interesting people, and then... When we went for the corporate management thing, it was sort of the beginning of the end of the band, which you hear a lot.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's not the big surprise story.
Yeah, it's not like
oh my God,
surprise.
I can't believe that happened. It's almost like it's de-rigger. You know, it's almost like inevitable. I hate to say
par
that.
Par for the course.
Yeah. On the menu.
Well, when you're a band, you know, I don't know, there's just when you're sensitive people like that and you get thrust into, I think, this world of insensitivity, it's got to really grate on you. You have to be strong.
So you got into chow.
I did. I went from one industry that satiates to another, as they say.
Is it kind of the same?
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
It's funny. When I
is it like food rock stars? Food stars? Chef stars?
I don't know, but somebody said, you know, it's funny, you pick the two industries that have the highest rate of drug addiction. Like,
really? The more food people are drug
addicts? Yeah, I guess so.
Like restaurant biz parties.
Yeah. Drunks and whatever.
Yeah.
And whatever. But
probably stimulants keep it going in the kitchen.
Yeah, so I've heard stories. Never seen it.
Well... But some things are different.
Yeah, it's a lot different.
Okay.
I just really wanted to become a fan of music again. You know, I was really losing that.
Yeah, because you were part of the machine.
I was part of the machine. I mean, one of the really, really fun things that I did was book the Viper Room during its, you know, quote-unquote heyday. I mean, we...
Sal, let's see.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Okay. Sal, I don't know. But we would sit in that office and we'd go... Let's get Adam and the Ants back together, you know? And so we'd start making calls to London, and then we'd come to L.A. We got Adam and the Ants reunited.
He had a freak out, right?
He's still in a mental institution.
Oh,
and
damn.
You know, Severin, I talked to him about that, and he, you know, because they're friends growing up, and he said he'll be in a mental institution for the rest of his life. Like, he's so far gone, you know?
I remember Darby came back from England and told everybody that was going to be the next big punk band.
Yeah.
And nobody knew about him, and then we saw this guy, you know, dressed as an Indian kind of, because Darby dressed like an Indian.
An Indian pirate.
Yeah, Indian pirate. But swishing his hips around and all. It was like, whoa.
Oh, it was great.
I remember the black flag guys got really, Greg especially was like, oh my God, this is terrible. And they came up with stickers, black flag kills ants.
That's right. That was amazing.
I thought they were like, you know, harmless. I wasn't going to waste any energy being negative on, come on, it's the new wave, you know.
Malcolm McLaren.
And, yeah, that's right. He had something to do with it.
Yeah, he did. And
but it was kind of part of new romantic.
Yeah.
People were bored with punk, so they had to take it.
But it was, like, I think also a vehicle for Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren.
Which was his music was always about.
Yeah.
Some side thing to push.
But, you know.
There's that movie with the Sex Pistol guys that are live. Filth and Fury?
Oh,
boy,
yeah,
is
that
I've
seen
it. The lich on Malcolm.
Yeah, they don't like him. They don't like him. I just watched Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains. What a cute movie. Have you seen it?
Is it about our stains? The East LA ones?
No, it's Diane Lane, but Steve Jones is in it, and Paul Simonon is in it. Because
The Stains was a great band. I heard they were playing. One of them just died. Maybe Jesse. But Robert. I heard they did some gigs. Actually, an early version of them was with Gerardo, Nervous Gender.
Oh, yeah.
He was from that scene. I never knew that in those days.
And Josie.
That was one of the most intense bands ever. I heard that Edward was doing some gigs. I like Gerardo.
He's not around. No, he's gone.
He was an artist kind of guy, but very trippy music adversary.
Yeah.
You know, in your face.
Definitely.
But to talk to him after the gigs, you know, I didn't know any of those
super
punk people. Yeah, I know. A lot of those punk guys were like that. It was like, wow. It was a trip.
Do you think most people are like that? Like, you get your... I mean, I find a lot of artists, you know, will get their aggression out on stage or, you know, whatever it is. And then when you talk to them, you're like, hi.
You couldn't believe it. You know, this guy... Jesus was just like me, another cocksucker from Galilee, homosexual nymphoman. I mean, screaming this in your face, all
and then
bent up
that
and something. And then he'd be the nicest, sweet. And would trip me out. You know, I'd drive up from Pedro. I didn't know any of these guys as real people. But they actually were real dudes that were kind of outside people, and they wanted to get it on stage, man. And but these cats actually grew up with those Stain guys. Staying Robert, you know, Greg Ginn picked up a lot of his lead guitar from him. Great, great musician. Good band. But what's this movie, Ladies and Gentlemen, The Stains?
The Fabulous Stains, yeah.
Steve Jones in it. I was on his show. Remember
Black Randy's in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's an older thing, because
yeah,
he's not with us either.
82, I think. 1982.
Oh, Steve wasn't in too good health then.
He looks good in the movie.
Yeah, well, he was a younger man, but... I was on his radio show. He's a great guy, man.
He is.
Great guy.
I miss his show.
I have a lot of respect for him. Yeah, if all that big radio jock or whatever.
He was a little oasis.
He was nothing like.
He was so fun.
I would have to do spiels with these guys. Hey, hi. You know, it was like, gee, you jive, brother. Brother Matt worked with Mersh Radio.
It wasn't fun. It took all the fun out of it.
Where were you?
First I worked at KMET. And then KXLU, and those two places were really loose and really fun. And then I worked at K-Rock and K-Earth and KNEC and some satellite radio stills, which the satellite radio even made it more refined. You couldn't even say what time it was because you're in different time zones. You can't say the weather. It's just 15 minutes after the hour. Just reading off cards, coming up next, weather and traffic.
You do that really well, by the way.
He had the blues shift on KXLU for a lot of years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was fun.
He went to Loyola Marymount.
And I heard you're having a KMET reunion or whatever.
Oh, really?
For one day.
Wow.
I don't know when it is. I kind of want to find out because they got Paraquat Kelly,
yeah.
And they got Steve, what are their names?
Ace Young's the
Jim
one
Ladd.
That called me Brother Matt originally.
Really?
Yeah, that's where Brother Matt started from.
Oh,
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's
but anyway,
in Wyoming.
One day, 94.7.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the
with all the real
frequency.
People.
They had the Paraquat Lounge, which was a room that had, it wasn't on the blueprints, and there was a door on every wall, There's just a big glass table in the middle. So you could, like, come in, go out. If they're chasing you, you could just run. It was really a neat little place right in the middle of the whole floor.
You know, not to digress, but my boss, when I was at Geffen, used to run Casablanca Records in the 70s.
Neil Bogart.
And he had a promo pillow that was a giant satin quaalude. And it said Roarer 714 on it. And, you know, it was a good foot and a half wide. And, you know, I wanted that pillow. So, I mean, can you imagine, like, a record company making, like, giant quaalude promo pillows to hand out to people?
Those were the days.
And, I mean, he said, you know, we did. We had big jars of quaaludes when you'd walk into the office, you know, people could just reach in, take one if they wanted.
There's a Last Poets Casablanca record.
There is, indeed.
Beyond the... the Garden of Unearthly Delights. And it's got like one side is an opera called Beyonder.
Beyonder. And Celluloid re-released it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Bernard Purdy, I think, does all the drums on there.
He does.
And then they had some cat play guitar and bass named Man. Like, no one knew who he was. He's like a homeless guy. He plays great. And no one knew what happened to him. And it's the trippiest. It's way different. It's like, it's still the voices, but it's got a band kicking with him.
But it is. Beyonder.
Yeah. Beyonder. The basic plot of that opera is the djinn, right? Bad people are trying to make a robot to kill God. And gets up there and he's about to get him with his fingertip laser, and that's when you hear Gabriel's horn, you know, it's all over. Game over.
Yeah, Last Poets are deep.
Yeah, and the Blessed Are Those That Struggle is on that record.
I haven't heard those songs in so long.
That's a wild record, but a Casablanca Last Poets record is like so insane. I think the first album was a Johnny Carson Best Of. And then they went on to Kiss and Donna Summer
and
Parliament, Funkadelic.
It was quite a collection.
Yeah, Neil Bogart. And then he died young.
Cancer,
right. Died young, like in his 30s, I think. Wow. That was a digression. So what's this movie with Steve Jones? What's it about? Like a fake band?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know who else is in it? Fee Waybill's in it.
That was a great band.
Yeah,
the Tubes.
What do you want from life?
White Pumps on Dope.
Yeah.
So
Raimondo Bondage.
Yeah.
With the motorcycle and the leather mask, and I mean, they were a crazy band, but it just went.
Well, you just need
that
to watch it.
That was a great band. I think they were from Arizona originally, and they were called the Beans. And then they went to San Francisco.
From Arizona, the Beans.
Yeah, and then they went to. Or something like that.
That's kind of funny.
And then they went to San Francisco and turned into this great, wild band.
Well, the Stains, Diane Lane is a disenfranchised.
He was Quaalude.
Yeah.
when they come out for the White Punk song, he'd be his Quaalude in the big platforms. And Wonder Bread or shit, Loaves of Bread. They play like 2 weeks in a row at the Whiskey and stuff. That was a wild. So there, all those characters are in this movie, huh? And
yeah.
It's like a band.
Mm-hmm. They go on the road together, and then somebody, the bass player in Fee Waybill's band, overdoses, and so Steve Jones' band becomes the headliner, the Looters. It's Ray Winstone, actually, is the singer, and the Stains are opening up for them, but they've never played as a band before. They just wanted to get out of town, and they're like, "Oh, we can sing, we can play." And they end up becoming way more popular than the Looters, and then the girls kick the Looters off the bill, and they get this big manager, and it implodes. It's what we've been talking about the whole time.
Kind of a Spinal Tap.
Yeah, it's great though.
Okay, I gotta check that out. What we're gonna do right now? Well, in a moment. Spin Cycle. Cool.
Been waiting all day.
International mode, I guess, no place in particular, but just traveling in airports recently, you know, you see people from every place, so yeah, we get a little taste of everything.
So a little
travel fever.
International feeder. Travel fever. Okay, great. That's the second hour of July 5. 2009 Dish and Watt from Pedro Show. Hold tight for hour three. June 5th, 2009. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show, and here's part five of Jack Flanders in the White Castle. Jack!
Hey, Mojo.
Looks like we're not alone.
Hi, I'm Jack Flanders.
And this is Dominique.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Do you live here?
I look after things.
I thought the robots did everything.
Well, I take care of them.
What kind of care do they need?
Maintenance. I'm sort of a tech vet.
Technical veterinarian?
Name's Zivo.
Zivo? I like that.
He keeps things running around here.
You keep the robots running around?
Well, they pretty much run themselves.
Don't you get lonely?
No. Why?
It's nice to have someone to talk to.
Well, I have the robots.
Yeah, but they don't speak.
They don't talk back.
Isn't it a one-way conversation?
When people talk to their pets.
Do the robots have names?
No, but you can give them names.
Do you know when Sanford White is coming back?
Well, I never know where the boss man is.
But there must be a way to contact him.
Yeah, what if something goes wrong?
Why has something gone wrong?
Is there an emergency number?
Is there an emergency?
No. Oh, it was nice meeting you, Zivo. Now, I'm going for a swim.
Be careful. There's some wicked currents.
Is it dangerous?
It's safe at the far end of the beach.
Thanks.
Does Sanford White live in this castle alone?
The boss man often invites guests.
Do you live in the castle?
No. The caretaker's cottage. Well, I have robots to look after. Enjoy your stay.
Mojo, do you think it's strange he lives here all alone? What are you thinking?
I'm thinking, I've seen him before.
Zivo?
I don't know.
What are you saying?
I don't know what I'm saying.
Well, fancy meeting you here.
Bonjour, Jack.
Am I disturbing you?
Oh, no. Of course not.
Were you thinking, meditating? just tweaking your suntan.
Thinking.
Did you meet Zivo, the tech vet?
No. What is a tech vet?
Zivo looks after Sanford's pet robots.
Jack, I was thinking. Maybe we should leave.
What's the hurry?
You're not bored?
No, not at all.
Well, you get bored so easily.
I think there's a reason you were invited to this island.
I thought there was, too.
I'm beginning to feel that being in White's castle is, well, it's like being in White's brain. And things are starting to get very interesting.
You know, they say that even after the Buddha was enlightened, old Mara would come around for a visit.
Mara was the demon who tried to tempt the Buddha?
Well, apparently the Buddha saw him as more of a big nuisance.
Mara used his shapely daughters to tempt the Buddha. But the Buddha knew where that was headed and didn't go there.
You mean even after he was enlightened, he still hadn't escaped delusion?
At first, Mara would come around just to see if he could trick the Buddha.
Even though he could see right through him?
Oh, yeah. The Buddha was cool, man. He used to say, "Hey, Mara, I see you hiding behind that tree. Come on over and give me five, my old friend."
He didn't say that.
Oh, apparently he did refer to Mara as an old friend.
He called Illusion his old friend.
The Buddha would say, "Hey, Mara, why are you looking so grim?" Mara would come shuffling over, looking all beat, and say, "You know, Buddha, this illusion business isn't all it's cracked up to be."
But someone has to do it.
That's the truth.
Why does someone have to do it?
Because that's what it's all about.
What is?
Life.
Oh, come on.
Well, that's how we learn.
What do we learn?
We learn that that's not it.
What's not it?
What it is.
What is it?
What is what isn't it.
Everything that isn't it. Is it?
It's what everything isn't is what it is.
Then what's that leave?
The big lip void.
What's that?
That's something you can't avoid.
Oy, void.
I think she's got it.
She's got it.
Zivo?
Yeah?
Why is it that wherever I go, I'm always tripping over a robot?
Oh, they aren't getting in your way, are they?
Well, I haven't fallen on my face yet, but they're everywhere. How many are there?
Well, I honestly don't know.
What do you mean you don't know how many robots you have?
They're not all active.
Why do I have a feeling they're always watching me?
They are personal valets.
You mean they'll always be following me around, waiting for my command?
Now that's what they do. You're their boss man.
You know, Mojo, there are times I'd like to give those robots a good swift kick in their stainless steel pants.
You don't want to do that.
No, actually, I do.
You know, they told us the robots can't speak. But I'll bet they can talk to each other.
Oh, so you think I'd get a bad reputation in the robot community, huh?
They know ways to get even.
Oh, yeah? How?
You order a cappuccino. It could take the rest of the day to get it.
Oh, you don't think they'd actually do that?
I wouldn't put it past them.
I guess I won't be kicking any personal valets.
Oh, they're not so bad.
They're always watching me.
Your wish is their command.
Well, maybe I ought to tell them to go jump in the ocean.
Oh, man. You don't want some rusty, squeaky robots following you around.
There's nothing worse than a salty robot.
Hi, Zivo.
Dominique.
Do you want to join us?
Why?
I just thought you might like the company.
It's not a good idea.
Why not?
Everyone will be asking me questions, and when I don't give them the answers they want, they just ask me more questions.
You don't like talking to people?
I do, if I don't have to keep answering questions.
We just met.
Wait, didn't this happen before you knew her?
Yeah, but why wasn't she more honest about it?
Maybe she thought you'd be jealous?
Jealous?
Maybe she was just playing it safe.
I wish there was a way we could zoom in to hear what they're really saying.
I thought Claudine told you.
Well, she did. By the looks of it, she didn't tell me everything.
So you want to eavesdrop?
Yeah, what's wrong with that? It happens to be the main feature playing in this room, right? Look at the way they're leaning into one another. It's almost as though they're conspiring. What's that robot doing?
Where?
No, not on the wall. Over there, peeking around the corner.
Oh, that's just Buana.
Buana?
My personal valet. I gave him a name.
Buana. Hey, Buana. Beat it.
No, wait. Buana, come on back here. Jack, you want a cappuccino?
Yeah, sure.
Buana, two cappuccinos.
Are his cappuccinos any good?
The best.
Really?
There is something about my island. Something special. Surprising. There's no real history to the island. Nothing that would account for its uniqueness. It sits on what I believe is a sweet spot.
Why do you call it a sweet spot?
It's the ambiance. You may have experienced something similar on the Greek islands. At certain times of the year, the air becomes golden. My island, St. Alicia, is a tropical island, but there is a softness, a tingling, soothing sweetness you can almost taste.
Birds become supersonic to explore.
From Pedro Show. That was part five, Jack Flanders in the White Castle. Great stuff over there at ZBS Media. ZBS.org. Z is in zebra, B is in boy, S is in ship. .org. Meatball Fulton. And the crew is still grinding out the mind movies.
Cool stuff.
Very interesting, yeah. Then we heard cover bands by DMF. DMF's a band I played Saturday night. I played at the Doll Hut.
All right.
Used to be called Linda's Doll Hut. Last time I played there, it's been many years.
Orange County.
And, yeah, right, good. Anaheim. Right off the I-5 in Lincoln. Different Lincoln than the one that... I don't know. Part of it's called Sepulveda. Part of it's called Pacific Coast Highway.
Yeah, it's all different.
Right, but yeah, that's strange. But DMF, yeah, funny band. They didn't have it on the CD they gave me, but they had a song I really liked. With it went, the chorus was, "Fuck, fuck, 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 fuck in my truck."
What does DMF stand
fuck,
for?
Fuck, 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 fuck in my truck. I'm fucking you. They were
love song.
I couldn't believe it.
I love song.
They were good. Something, yeah, tender, romantic, charmer, tune. Fuck, fuck, fuck. Stuck in my head, though.
It's catchy little tune. Yeah. I'll be singing it all the way home.
But, you know, play there again was a neat. It was with Pete and Jer and
Second man. And fun gig. Last time I played Anaheim was maybe a year ago, closer to Disneyland. It's a place called Juke Joint or something. And the Dollhead. Dollhead's really happening, in a way. You know, it's an old roadhouse. Mm. And some guy just called me out of the blue, you know, a couple days before. There's some trouble with booking or some kind of scene politics down there that Pedro's far away enough. We don't have any idea. And I just like playing, so I said, yeah. And a lot of cats came out and had a good time. I want to play there again. I like playing in Orange County. Places don't stay open much long. And, you know, yeah.
That place got some history, though.
I don't. It does. A lot of people play there. I don't know if I'd move to Orange County or something, but I like playing gigs there, you know. There's people there. It's hard for them to go see gigs. They got to go a long way if they're going to go Hollywood or something.
So you've been getting some cool variety lately with Missing Man and Second Man.
Huh? Yeah, mixing them up.
Cool.
Well, October, November, they'll be out. Tom Morell will be out with Lou Barlow. So I'll be doing a lot more Second Man. But I like both bands. They're just, even sometimes we do the same songs, but it's different because different
cats. Cool.
I mean, one's an organ band, and so one's a guitar, but they're just different personas. Great guys at them all. I've never really had that where I had two active bands going.
It's working.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I like it a lot. The next one is with Missing Man, with Tom and Raul, Friday for, Saturday, the 11th, for at Deep Piazza's for Surf Rider.
Cool.org
benefit. Oh, yeah. After DMF, we played The Boy. Name of the band, and Sabotage, not a cover of the Beastie song, but his own. That's a trip. That's a piece of work there.
Where are they from? Where's the boy from?
The boy is from Tokyo.
Oh.
Yeah. It's quite an original take on music. It's bold. Sometimes a bedroom warrior, not having to please a crowd, you don't care, you know. You just go for it. Although he told me he's looking for a label. So maybe that's his strategy, I don't know.
The boy needs a label.
Become accessible. Kim, who you like that's playing around? You know what? I hardly do Hollywood gigs anymore. Remember that in the old days, that was all.
I really like Haunted Graffiti, Ariel Pink and Haunted Graffiti. Have you heard that?
No.
He's really influenced by our Stevie Moore.
I know Mr. Stevie.
Does a lot of...
In fact, he came on the stage when I played in Maxwell's this last tour.
Really?
Came right on the stage. Stevie's an older gentleman.
He's a genius.
Many songs.
Yeah. How many songs? He's written 6,000 or something, yeah.
And I gave him some bass riffs and he made songs out of them. He's a great cat. I guess his daddy was a big session player, a bass player in Nashville. So he was music early.
Yeah.
And started writing in the 60s. And he's in his 60s. Great. So where does this cat live?
Yeah, he...
Is he SoCal?
Yeah, he is.
What's his name?
Ariel Pink.
Ariel Pink, okay.
Yeah, and he's got a good band together. I mean, it keeps getting better.
What town?
Where is he living currently?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think he's, like... Kind of local. Echo Parky, Solis, maybe.
Local for you.
Highland,
hey, Pedro local.
Maybe Highland Park, yeah. My local. But he tours all over the world.
Great.
Lo-fi. Has his own label, puts his own records out.
Yeah.
Who
else you like?
I've really been into Kraftwerk lately.
Yeah, right. That's what
I can't.
She said she heard the first three albums this morning.
Wow.
So your little remix there was perfect for me. And
there's only one guy's left in the band now.
The Kraftwerk? Yeah. But new stuff is I don't know. That's just the one thing that comes to mind because it's the most original thing that I've heard in a really
long
time.
That's playing around local.
Yeah.
What's your favorite club right now to go see a band?
Oh, here we go. I love going to Tex. Have you been there?
The restaurant?
Over on Sunset where they have music on Wednesdays, Thursdays.
T-A-A-I-X.
Yeah. I always see Joe there on Wednesdays.
Oh.
There's like a lounge act that plays. But I haven't been to the Redwood yet.
Downtown, 2nd Street.
I don't like going to the Echo, but it seems to be the only place where people play.
I haven't been there in a while.
Yeah.
What did I last see there? Can't remember.
I know.
We did that benefit.
Yeah.
Richie Hatch.
I saw a certain ratio there. Remember
wow. Yeah, an England band from early 80s.
Yeah, I saw them there recently. Well, not that
Bunbaro, recently. They did that cover of Shack Up. Very
you
strange
know that song?
English.
Well, Shack
Up? It was a 70s funk band from Washington, D.C., but this early 80s England band covered it. It was so bizarre.
So good.
Yeah, I like the original.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go dig that up.
It's pretty trippy. It's about like, I guess it used to be illegal to
cohabitate.
Yeah.
And I like I like Sparkle Horse.
Oh.
You know, I like the project they did with Danger Mouse. That's not
He's
bad.
Busy.
He's
yeah.
He's a busy man. Very, very busy.
And he had some controversy too with some label stuff.
Well, I don't think that record, I've heard it's not coming out because they had too many collaborations with too many artists, too many legalities, and of course when they were in the studio doing it, they never thought about that, and then EMI kind of, the tangled web they wove, they were just like, you know, we're just going to put this on the back burner for a minute or two. And
you know, the guy's just very creative.
Mm-hmm.
I got to meet him once at Roskilde Festival in Denmark. Just got a lot of ideas going on. And you have stupid machine stuff like that getting in the way.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who just gets an idea and makes it
and
happen.
He just goes and does it. And
love it.
You know, it's...
I love it.
No holds barred.
It's available.
Did you, go to this Coachella this year?
Uh-uh.
You know, I saw a Kraftwerk at a... Maybe it was 2, 3, 4 years ago.
Ariel Pink played Coachella this year.
This was the Paul McCartney year?
Yes. Did you go?
No, I didn't. But I saw Kraftwerk, and it was two of the guys left. That was just one. I also found the Kling Klang studio in Dusseldorf.
Uh-huh.
You know, I saw the door. There's no sign or anything hidden. But I found it. I walked right to it from the hotel.
Take a picture?
I got a picture.
You did good.
There's no name on the mailbox or anything. That's... It shares with other things. Yeah, they're a very interesting band, trippy band. I like them a lot.
I need to refer to my iPod to see
what music you're hearing.
Yeah, because there's too much, you know.
Yeah.
I like this. I was telling you, I was listening to this Belgian 80s synth band called Soundspace.
Like what was that one band? There was a band from there. Oh, man. It was actually the guy, the mixer guy, was playing the whole thing, and the guys up on stage were just jumping around. What were they called?
Is it old?
KDM.
KMFDM.
It was like one of them kind of bands.
Yeah.
I don't think it was that band. Or maybe it was. But it's like the guy mixing it was really running the whole thing. He's running all the machines.
The man behind the curtain.
Yeah, that's on the stage. So. I can't remember. Maybe there was numbers in the name. It's terrible. I can't remember.
Huh.
Who? Pete Mazich's band plays Saturday with us. Called Angry Johnny, Slav guys, Pedro guys. Those are the dudes, Tone and
Mandage, one of the guys who joined me and Pete to do that documentary song, a song for the documentary on the Bloody Thursday, Waterfront Strike in 34. And yeah, that's going to be on PBS.
Good job,
Jack. Those were heavy times, man. People don't know. The symbol for the, this is Local 13 ILWU, it's just the pallet hook.
Oh, that's nice.
And you know why Harbor Division got built right there?
Yeah. Yeah, they got
there's a new one.
Yeah, brand new corporate office.
With a sculpture.
Style. Yeah. Corporate style.
Sculpture, yeah.
Corporate style cop
office.
6% of all new buildings, 6% of their budgets are dedicated to corporate sculpture.
Wow. Even police stations.
I believe so. In the county of Los Angeles, yes.
Wow.
Trippy.
Which is why we have so much bad art.
Could have Raymond
sorry.
Talk about that. Don't. You know about my got stolen, right?
No.
Last August, the Stooges stuff all got stolen in Montreal.
Oh, and you never got it back.
No. But I got three basses from different people. Adam Yauch, a guy named Andy, a guy named Dan. And so that's very nice. I'm not going to... I think that bass was meant to go.
Uh-huh.
Especially if people are nice enough like
the
that.
The blue one?
No. Blue one I had already sold
to
Kim for a dollar.
Oh, no. I didn't know that.
But now Kim's stopped playing guitar. They've got this guy, Mark Eyeball, from Pavement. Yeah, you know what? I played some... I didn't mention this, but way in the first hour, after that Tan Line song, as I started talking about that gig, Spaced Out, but we played something from the new... Sonic Youth album. It's called Malibu Gas Station.
Yeah, I like that.
And yeah, she's just playing guitar now, no more bass. And then we heard Elevating Device, another excerpt last show we heard one. And that's a whole album that Nels Klein did with G.E. Stinson, which you thought was kind of trippy?
Yeah.
But they're old friends, you know. I guess G.E.'s originally from Chicago. But... You know, Nels is up for collaborating with anyone. Yeah. And it's a trippy record, man. Like everything. Does he do anything, Mersh? No.
No.
Even with the Wilco thing, he brings the Nels. He's an incredible musician. Singular talent.
I think Paul Schaefer, when I think about that guy.
Nels and Paul Schaefer?
No,
G.
Stinson. Okay. Well, music is a little different.
So you and Nels...
I met him once, right? In First Avenue or something?
You and Nels do the Central Park thing?
August 1st.
What are you doing in Central Park?
M. Ward asked us to play, open up for him. And at the same time, since we got to get some songs up, we'll make an album out. A Dougie Bound... Yuka Honda.
Nice.
Yeah. Scary, never done it
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I was going to say, you never played Central Park.
No, and I haven't played with those two.
Wow, that'll be great.
Dougie played like many years with Iggy. Iggy called me last week. He's in great spirits. I guess he told me he's been on some shows, talk shows, and doing things. He did play with Steve Jones here when I was on tour, and Flea and Chad. And he said Ronnie Wood played it. It was some kind of thing Bob Forrest put on.
Oh, yeah. It was the...
Somebody helps.
Music
helps.
Music
cares.
Yeah.
Is Bob living out in the desert?
No.
He's living here.
Yeah.
But he's a lot in the Joshua Tree and... Yeah.
No more Thelonious.
No more Thelonious. But he's busy with this other stuff.
He's got a documentary coming out about himself. I mean, okay. I don't know if he's... He's doing it or not? What's it called? Bob the Monster?
Oh.
Yeah.
The bad years.
Well, I don't
he's
know.
He's kind of quite a journey. I've always liked Bob. But he had something to do with that gig, and they came and sang with those guys play it.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was on tour, so he told me about that. He's just in his great spirits.
I saw a little clip of him on CNN when I was down in Costa Rica. He was doing a little special My Town.
Oh, yeah.
Miami.
Because Miami. And Cayman, too. He spends a lot of time in Cayman. Has a pad in Cayman in Miami. He likes sun, man. Mm. He likes sun.
I think all those years of being Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti, Michigan, and yeah, you know what? I'm going to be in the sun.
He said it's a sunny city for shady people.
It's so true.
Even back in those days, you know, on the second album, on Funhouse, the first song, it wasn't actually originally down on the street. It was down on the beach. If you listen to the words floating around, I'm real, you know. But Scotty said, wow, you know, there's no real beach around here, eh?
Yeah, it doesn't sound...
So, Scotty said, he said, let's just say, what about street, down the street? So Egg was like, okay.
That's funny.
Yeah. But, you know, music is to transcend. John Fogerty, you know, very Northwest Bayou. Yeah. North Berkeley.
Yeah, no jungle to run through up there.
You know, so why not? Down on the beach, you know. Where the faces shine. You know? And then that's where he ends up living. He loves the sun, man. I remember beyond tour and him just laying out and likes to swim in.
How was it when you met Madonna?
I was coming through the kitchen after we played, and so it was a surprise. Didn't know that was going to happen. Uh-huh. She was coming through the other end of the kitchen. The Waldorf. And all of a sudden, there she is, and Iggs telling her who we are. And I just bowed. I couldn't talk. I didn't know what to say. I was speechless. And she said that the band was good or something. You played well. She actually was sitting right in front of me when we played. I didn't see her. I was just, you know, when I do Stooges gigs, I just watch Iggy. Check in with the Ashtons, you know. A lot on Ig, because I would get afraid, so I could focus on him. But there was one point near the end, you know, we did two of her songs, the trippiest versions of Madonna songs. But I saw her, she was sitting right in front of these tables, you know. And I didn't look at her face or anything, I just noticed she was there. I was like, oh man, hold on, get the ending right. Get the ending right. Here's some music.
That was most of Jim O'Rourke's Spirits Never Forgive off of his album Tamper. Now here's something from Belgium.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. For our last bit of music there, we just heard Faster by Rachel Yamagata. Zeelandoder by Jan van Gentband. Belgian. Great stuff.
Go Belgian.
You know about this? We got Shakespeare.
No.
In the summertime. Yeah, it's called ShakespeareByTheSea.org. You can go to the website.
Great bunch of people.
And this year they're doing
As You Like It. And one other one, I think.
Yeah, Love's Labor Lost.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a nice spot right in the park there on the cliffs.
Yeah, it ends August 11th. And Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. Mm-hmm. It's actually a troupe. They travel around. They do some other South Bay, Dondo maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Pedro is the happening one right here.
Cool spot.
The band shell here at Point Fermin. Our oldest building in town is the lighthouse here at Point Fermin. And they do the play right there. See Willie Shakes.
Yeah, Willie the Shake.
That's a great thing. And, well, you got some final thoughts? Being great guests for us. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming
down. Thanks for having me.
You've learned to fall in love with music again by getting away from the machine. And you make a living with the chow.
Uh-huh, I do. You just brought up Yellow Magic Orchestra.
There's
something else I can go back and dig deep into.
Yeah, trippy band, huh?
Really?
I remember them. Maybe they've done some reunions, but they've all gone different ways, and a lot of respect over there for them, because they were early on for their music scene. And so, it was, even though it was kind of a difficult, trippy song for me, I tried my hardest. And kind of comes in at the end. The bass. Bass hangs out. Shuko's playing the trippy drums. Incredible how they can do that. She can do it without hearing it. You know, they can read the music.
Wow.
Not even cracking it.
Yeah.
Just go for it. But, that's what blew me away. The Weak Jamaicano documentary. They're way into this. They came out over there with subtitles. Shimmy was like this, watch this. And me and Deep Boot all out of tune, all her heads off, and I'm going, wow.
Did you get all the subtitles right?
I don't know. I can't read it yet.
I got to tell you, because sometimes...
a lot of times.
Fun thing to do is read the...
most languages
lyrics
aren't
that Japanese
literal.
Write down. And
you should read his emails. You should read his email. His emails are total poetry. They're beautiful. But Bukowski would do like a book in Germany. He'd have it translated in German. Then he'd go get that translation and give it to another German guy. Okay, now translate it in English. And so he'd look at his version.
Matchup.
Chinese telephone, right? And sometimes it'd be like, shh. But people that are good with the two languages, I know the coin locker baby, Haru Murakami, she just says terrible translation. So if you don't know the other language, you're total hostage. Yeah. You don't know.
Well, one of my favorites is Time Zone and World Destruction, where...
African Bambaataa.
Yeah, where he says, you and I know it because the Bible tells you.
Yeah.
And the Japanese, Sony... the lyrics say, you and I know it because the barber tells you. And we laughed about that for a little bit. I still laugh about it because, the barber can be all-knowing.
Especially if you know about, Steve Reed told me, in the hood, it was like the Schwitz.
Yeah.
It's where the old guys and the young guys came together. George Clinton... put together Parliament from the
original
processes.
You want to know about it? Go talk to the barber.
The barber with the barbershop.
Forget about the Bible. Talk to the barber.
Kim, it's been great to have you aboard. Much respect. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Brother Matt, for
Brother
essential aiding and abetting.
Nice to have you here.
And it's been July 5, 2009, out from Pedro's show. Keep your powder dry.
Yeah.